James Paxton was charged with 5 extra earned runs following a scoring adjustment to Sunday's game, raising his ERA through 3 starts to 8.40. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, powered by DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy baseball site. Use the promo code DVR to get a free contest entry today with a first-time deposit on DraftKings. I'm Clay Link, alongside Jake Litarski. You can find Jake on Twitter at Jakeski52. I'm at Clay W. Link. It is the evening of April 22nd, 2015. If you listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher and can please rate and review the podcast, we'd greatly appreciate that. Also, be sure to check out the new RotoWire Prospect podcast with myself and James Anderson. New episode coming Thursday. James has actually been in Northwest Arkansas checking out a pretty stacked, you know, minor league series. A lot of top prospects. Looking forward to, you know, hearing his firsthand analysis of some of those players. But James, James Paxton, really tough break here. Error was changed to a single. Tack on 5 earned runs to his ledger. Do you own him anywhere?
I fortunately do not own him anywhere. I backed off a little bit this year. I know some of those numbers from previous years are a little bit, fluky, and they're not really supported by the FIP and the XFIP and a lot of the sabermetrics. So I stayed back a little bit. It would have to be a pretty deep league for me to consider him, but fortunate enough, I do not own any shares, and based on this start, I think that's the right call.
Yeah, I didn't end up with any shares either. I mean, highly touted guy. I mean, coming up through the system, got a lot of hype as a guy to own in single season redraft leagues, but didn't end up with any shares myself either. And you know, looking at this, I mean, he's got a nice matchup his next time out against the Twins. That's going to be a chance for him to really right the ship. But at the same time, you know, in shallower leagues, I think you can probably give some consideration to dropping Paxton, even though tough to swallow, especially with all these runs on your, counting against you already. It's hard to really, you know, let him go without having those starts to really bring that down and compensate for these tough outings.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so tough to start your year off in the hole with ERA because, as I've mentioned before, you can always trade for strikeouts, trade for saves, and whatnot, but the ratios are so much tougher to make up. So yeah. It becomes time with guys like these where you almost want to think about cutting bait. I don't want to be overreact too much, but have seen little encouraging things during the first few starts. Does have a 7.2 K per nine, which is isn't terrible for a starter. Could get some strikeouts there. There's always the chance to rebound, but as of right now, not looking so hot.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would hold on to him in deeper, 12 teams even and beyond, but we're in a 10-team league, and I think, Paxton definitely does not need to be on there. Just a 8% swing strike rate so far this season. Fastball velocity is actually down more than a full mile per hour so far. One encouraging sign, though, is the line drive rate's pretty respectable at 15.1. That's pretty encouraging. But we have a Twitter question lined up for later at the end of the show. But we had one last night, too. A Twitter listener wondering if he should drop either Chris Tillman or Mike Fiers for Anthony DeSclafani. I said, I may drop Fiers for him. I mean, Fiers, I still have some faith, but a lot of really flat stuff right now. Was hit hard yesterday. Would you drop either of those players for DeSclafani or Paxton?
I mean, as someone that watches the Brewers quite a bit, the Fiers train, it's been a roller coaster since he came up. He started off really hot in that initial year, and then I think some hitters got a little more film, were able to figure him out, and he kind of went the other direction. Then he started to come back a little bit, and now it's just looking rough because he's someone that you want to get an early lead. The Brewers have been unable to establish an early lead in just about any game this season, so that's a bit concerning. If it were me, I'd drop Fiers for DeSclafani right now. I got to see him in action on Monday night and really liked what I saw there at Miller Park. And And I do own him in one of our leagues, and I'm very excited about the prospects moving forward because he came at a pretty cheap price on draft day, he's only moving up the rankings at the moment.
Yeah, I think his success is pretty sustainable. I mean, not to this level that we've seen, but you know, showing good control, really efficient so far. So, you know, I'm not willing to give up on Fires in anything in any deeper leagues yet. Have a share of him in our stake league, and you know, just going to have to fight through it. I know. You know, some people are still, you know, pumping the brakes, saying to be patient, and you do have to exercise, you know, a lot of patience early on with a lot of guys. Chris Carter's one who, you know, it's been a tough pill for me to swallow so far, but I know he's, you know, really streaky, bound to turn around eventually, and you can't really, you know, evaluate a pitcher on three starts, so you got to kind of, you know, play the waiting game.
As a Carter owner last year, I know I do feel your pain. There were times when I had even removed him from my lineup for the week, didn't cut bait, but he'll come back and he'll hit 10 homers in 2 weeks. And so the good things around the corner, I guess you would hope.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll jump into some big news here. Jose Bautista, Joey Bats has a right shoulder strain, held out of the lineup Wednesday, actually aggravated it, trying to throw out Delman Young at first base. I mean, the bat flip wasn't enough to show up the Orioles on Tuesday. Had to try to gun him out, paying the price for it now. Manager John Gibbons did acknowledge that a DL stint is a possibility for Bautista. Pretty disconcerting, just given that, you know, he's had injury issues in the past, definitely, and somebody that, you know, was really a first-rounder everywhere in all drafts coming into the year. What's your level of concern here?
My level of concern, it's Joey Bats, it's Jose Bautista, you know what you're getting from him. My level of concern is mostly for other owners who did take one of those first round picks on him. But I mean, it was just an adrenaline fueled emotional play to try to gun Delman Young at first base. I thought it would have been awesome if he would have got him, but of course, now looking back at the secondary effects, it's a little bit concerning there. But fortunately, the Blue Jays have been getting some excellent play out of guys like Dalton Pompey and Kevin Pillar so far, and a Michael Saunders return is around the corner. So I think the team on a whole shouldn't suffer too much. Of course, when you lose a hitter like that, makes opposing pitchers think about your lineup a little bit differently. But on a whole, I think they'll be all right. And, you know, the DL thing hasn't been official. It's just a possibility. So we never know. He'll probably have to stretch it out and see how it feels the next couple days. I don't know if they give cortisone shots for that, probably behind the scenes. But, you know, hopefully something that doesn't sideline a player like that for too long, because as we were able to see last night, he can definitely bring quite a bit of excitement to the game.
And
I don't blame him at all for slowing that and flipping the bat and taking the jog, just because, man, if I were him and someone threw behind me, I would do the same thing if I took him deep the next pitch. So little fault there.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't want to read too much into, you know, Gibbons saying that there is a possibility. I mean, Don Mattingly said it was a possibility for Puig, and he was back in the lineup the next day. I mean, I think he's just, you know, covering all his bases. So in case he does end up on the DL, didn't give any misleading information, you know what I mean? But, you know, looking at their depth chart right now, Steve Tolleson, the only healthy reserve outfielder on the roster right now, but you mentioned Michael Saunders, has been out with a knee injury, but he actually has a chance to rejoin the Blue Jays for Friday's game. So you got to think, you know, he comes back, probably takes over and left. Kevin Pillar, I mean, he can play right. Might as well slot him in right field.
I mean, you've seen the defensive plays that he's made this year. You got to imagine he can do that from any part of the field.
Yeah, I think the highlight reel catch that he made where he scaled the wall wasn't right. So clearly can play the position. I don't know if he has. Actually, no, that was in left. But I think he can play. I think he can play right field adequately. I mean, it's something where you know, even with his deficiencies, I think he's an upgrade over Tolleson, so you're not going to really, you know, sit him in favor of Tolleson whatsoever. But yeah, file that away. You're thinking about, you know, using him anytime soon. You definitely want to keep close tabs on Jose Bautista's status. Now, in the AL Central, pretty big news here in that Joe Nathan suffered a setback. He was on a rehab assignment with AAA Toledo. Really, it was just supposed to be his first and only rehab appearance with the affiliate, but pretty serious setback as far as how it sounds right now. Said he felt a pop in the elbow. Still waiting the results of the MRI, but you know, at 40 years old, I mean, this is something that, I mean, I don't want to speculate too much, but something that could endanger maybe his career. You know, it's troubling, especially if, you know, the elbow is blown out. But, you know, while we await the results of the MRI, what are you doing with Nathan? Is it time to just cut bait and, you know, take a flyer on somebody else?
You know, Nathan was one of those guys that I did shy away from on draft day. Of course, the age scares me a little bit. If I'm going to take a 40-year-old player, it has to be at such a value that I'm okay with assuming the risk. And whenever you hear, you know, heard a pop in your elbow, even if it's a 23-year-old pitcher, it's not good news. So, you know, again, don't want to be overreactionary to the injury here, but I think it's almost safe to say at this point that the Joaquin Soria show is here to stay for the Tigers, and he could be a valuable fantasy player this year if that team keeps winning and keeps scoring runs like they do.
Yeah, I mean, Brad Ausmus has been, you know, set on returning Nathan to the closer role when he returns, but, you know, with Nathan suffering this setback, I think there's going to be a pretty long window, a big window for Soria to really run away with this job. And, you know, personally, you're right, you don't want to really overreact yet, but just given how he described it, he said he felt like it broke his arm. Ooh. I mean, that's really troubling. What I did in one of my leagues, I had Nathan in a DL spot. Mm-hmm. What I did was activate him and drop him for Sean Doolittle, and then put Doolittle in the DL spot, just because I think Doolittle, you know, not only, you know, I honestly think he'll make it back quicker than Nathan, but also the upside is definitely in his favor.
Yeah, I cannot argue with that at all. Sometimes you got to be looking ahead, and that's a great move to make. And, you know, if you have DL spots in your league, there's plenty of chances to take advantage of that. And you almost always want to at least have one guy occupying those spots. So guys like Hyunjin Ryu is another one that's on the DL. If he's out there, pick him up, throw him on the DL or your spot and see what happens. And the same case applies here with Doolittle and even Nathan. But I do agree that the long-term prospects of Doolittle are looking better than Nathan at the moment.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you have a DL spot, you have to take advantage of it. I mean, even if it means, you know, say your roster is healthy for the most part, but you want to, you know, make another ad drop. So what I would recommend doing is, you know, adding a guy who's on the DL and dropping the player you're going to drop in the first place, moving him to the DL, and then go out and add the guy that you really wanted to add in the first place. I think that, you know, just keeps your options open, gives you more options, and, you know, taking a flyer on an upside guy who you may have to wait on, but not hurting you occupying a bench spot whatsoever. Troubling news kind of out in the NL East. Matt Harvey saw a doctor Wednesday for a foot issue that's been bothering him since spring training. This is really the first word of it, though, even though he's been dealing with it for a bit. Ended up being diagnosed with a mild left ankle sprain. Now still expected to make his next start, but you know, they're labeling it mild, but with a player like this, is this something where you maybe feel like they should just take precaution and maybe skip him?
You know, as a fantasy owner, you might think that way, that, hey, I'd rather have him miss this start and have him be okay for the long run, because a lot of these ankle sprains, they're only going to get better if you stay off them. But on a whole, I'm not overly concerned about it. Harvey's a really competitive guy. He's off to a great start, 3-0, 3.5 ERA, even 1.0 whip there with 24 strikeouts. And if it's been bothering him since this spring and he's been able to jump out to that start, I wouldn't want him to be held back. I guess as a Mets fan or someone in that organization, I wouldn't want him to be held back if it wasn't completely necessary, just because of that presence he brings on the mound. And he's your win guy. He's your guy that when he takes the hill, you expect to win. Everyone in the clubhouse expects to do that. And regardless of if it's a small, mild ankle sprain or maybe a little bit more discomfort, I mean, you know, tape it up and keep it going, because you don't want him to lose momentum from where he's at right now.
Yeah, and the fact that he's been able to pitch so well while dealing with it already is encouraging and makes me think that he should be fine to make this start. Part of me as an owner does wish that, you know, if it's been lingering, you may want to just get out in front of it. You know, it may be too late to really get out in front of it, but, you know, take the steps necessary to really, you know, eliminate the issue. But you're right, Harvey, I mean, 3.50 ERA through three starts, but, you know, the peripherals are outstanding, 24-1 K to walk. You look at the xFIP, 2.12. I mean, he's living up to all the expectations, swinging strike rate up at 13.7%. Fastball velocity right where it was pre-Tommy John. I mean, 95.6 mile per hour average on that fastball. Line drive rate has been up a bit, and he has, you know, surrendered a couple homers, but Not really worried about that, just given, you know, how often he's missing bats.
Yeah, pitchers can survive just fine giving up solo shots as long as you're not putting runners on base. And like you mentioned, an excellent whip and the peripherals all check out. Harvey was a guy whose value was climbing and climbing from leading up to the start of the season on drafts. The later you drafted, probably the higher price you had to pay for him. And he's been living up to it so far. I had my doubts. As much as I wanted to get Harvey and own a share in some formats, I couldn't seem to grab a stake of him for a reasonable price. And he's showing us all why right now. So hopefully the ankle's not pushing him back too much. And doesn't look like it will, because he will start against the Yankees. You know, not a spectacular matchup there, but when it's Matt Harvey, it's your win guy. You got that crosstown Subway Series rivalry there. I can expect big things. Daly's maybe a little bit of a different story, just because, you know, I'd almost want to see him pitch once, make sure he looks comfortable. But again, as we went over, you wouldn't have been able to pick that up with the naked eye watching him. I watched him pitch a couple games before this. I would have never guessed there was an ankle injury trouble in him. So maybe mild is the actual classification in this case, although that's not often when managers say that. Could be here.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you look at, you know, his pitch counts in each of his starts, 91 in his first, 95 in his second, 84 in his third. I think, you know, they'll probably keep him at that range probably for a while. I mean, he hasn't gone beyond six innings so far this year. Of course, a lot of talk about them, you know, curtailing his innings, limiting his workload this season. I think they kind of talked about, with postseason, about 200 total innings. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, taking, you kind of take for granted them making the postseason, but the Mets are off to an incredible start. And, you know, do you think that there's going to be a time where they skip him, or do you think they just go with this route and, you know, keep him at around six innings per start and try to balance it that way?
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways teams have done this in the past. I know some guys were stretched out in long relief early on only to make it into the rotation later. I think of a couple Braves guys, Alex Wood last year, and even Medlin a few years beforehand. So that's what I thought of him that way. But that's a tough sell to Mets fans if you're Terry Collins, because he's like I said, he's your win guy. He's the guy that they throw out there all the time and expect to win every game that he starts, and like has happened so far. So again, very tough sell to the fans if they're going to start skipping his starts. But I mean, the strategy seems to be going all right. He's not throwing a ton of pitches. He's not going deep into games, which is a slight concern from a fantasy standpoint. Real life standpoint, of course, you hope he puts you in a position to win so the bullpen can take over from there. I am a little bit concerned because they said with postseason 200 innings, I was thinking, you know, maybe 180 in the regular season. I'm sure they might tip the scales if they're in contention and Harvey feels good, because Harvey's competitive and he's going to say everything he can and do everything he can to convince the brass that he's healthy and that he's good to go. He wanted to get back into games at the end of last season and they had to hold him back for that. So I think the rehab and stuff has gone well enough for him. Again, a little bit of a concern from a fantasy standpoint as far as limiting his pitch counts, but this could be a great opportunity for him moving forward, because if he learns to pitch more efficiently and you know, get through six, seven innings on 85, 90 pitches, that's going to be excellent for him moving forward. I remember I know, completely different situation, but earlier on in Clayton Kershaw's development, one of his biggest focuses was if he could strike everybody out every time if he wanted to, but he'll have 100 pitches by the sixth inning. And one of the things he worked on that made him an elite pitcher to this day was being able to, you know, hey, a ground ball is as good as a strikeout. It counts as an out on the scoreboard and those kind of things. And if Harvey learns to become efficient like that so he can still pitch into deep in games on that limited pitch count, I think that bodes well for his long-term prospects. And even as a fantasy guy this year, you want him to throw as many innings and get as much work out of him as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you that, you know, when they get near the finish line, if Harvey's feeling good, maybe they, you know, back off from that stance just a little bit. But I also think, you know, maybe during the middle portion of the season, they could use off days to maybe skip him here and there, just because, you know, middle of the season, you're not going to get as much heat for doing that as you would probably, you know, in August, September and, you know, whatnot. So I think that they, you know, maybe use off days to skip him maybe two times. But you think if they keep him six or seven innings, he can make 30 starts and still, you know, be within that limit for him. But yeah, it looks like he will start Saturday against the Yankees. Like him in that matchup, definitely. I mean, Yankees, a lot of solid bats really in that lineup, but you know, but a lot of lefties. So I think that, you know, that he makes for a pretty good play, even in that matchup. I think he'll step up to the plate in the Subway Series and really bring home nice value for owners, even with this a bit of an injury concern. Now, for Boston, Shane Victorino, I mean, we all knew this was coming. Left Wednesday's game with right hamstring tightness, replaced in the game by Alan Craig. Worth noting that Rusne Castillo, down at AAA, dealing with a shoulder injury, but has resumed baseball activities. No timetable for his return, though. So, if Victorino were forced on the DL, it doesn't sound like Castillo would be an option to fill in right away. In the meantime, you know, who do you think sees most of the time? Do you think it's Craig and Nava, or which one of those two do you get like more?
I think I was going to say Craig, just because Craig came into the game and seems to be one of the favorites for that. Nava will maybe spell him on occasion. They could play a little bit of matchups there. I wouldn't necessarily rule out, has Brock Holt ever played outfield before? Yeah. They seem really high on him and trying to find ways to get him into the lineup. Maybe he even spells on occasion. But, of course, the first thing you hear when Shane Victorino is getting hurt, I think he might have done it trying to steal a base, or, you know, he also might have got hit by a pitch, I think, in that game, but it was a little bit unrelated. But, of course, the first thing you hear think of when you hear that is Rusne Castillo. How's he doing? If he was healthy, you know, they might as well just DL Victorino and make the call right away, and let Victorino, you know, smooth out the hamstring issues that have. I mean, this isn't anything new at all. If you had to predict which injury Victorino would get at the beginning of the year, this seems like a pretty common guess. It would probably have the best odds there. But of course, Rustillo combine the names there. Castillo dealing with his own ailment, getting back in action though. So he seems to be on the right track, but the timing doesn't quite add up, which is a bit unfortunate for those Castillo owners that are still hanging on to him and holding out hope that he can take over that everyday job, you know, by midseason.
Yeah, I'm hoping he can take over that job by mid-May. I mean, hell, I have him so many spots. I'm really high on the guy's talent and hope he gets an opportunity sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, I mean, again, nothing to suggest Victorino is DL bound or anything, but anytime he comes down with a lower body injury, you got to, you know, kind of, hey, I get a little scared here that it could be a long-term thing. And a platoon between Craig and Nava seems to just make sense. I mean, Nava's so comfortable batting from the left side, even thought about, you know, abandoning the switch hitting. And, I would think he'd see most of the starts, get Craig in there to, you know, mash lefties.
Yeah, absolutely. And I cannot argue with that. And again, like you said, I just want to reiterate, not time to freak out about Victorino yet, but I'd be willing to bet that he won't be in tomorrow's lineup or maybe even the next day. Usually this is a 2 or 3 days rest minimum thing just to make sure the hammy's okay. So definitely something to watch for if you've got Victorino, and especially if you've got, I personally in a 16-teamer, I've got Craig sitting on the bench. Might warrant a start next week because I know I've got Carlos Gomez, Alex Rios on the DL, and when it gets to be deep like that, you just got to get someone who's getting reps. And if I can get maybe a homer or two out of Craig, I'm really lacking in power in a couple leagues, and I'm hoping I can maybe get some out of him.
Coming into today's action, 11 games for Victorino, a 5-for-34 mark, I mean, 147 average, 469 OPS. I realize small sample, and he did look pretty spry on a few occasions in the outfield, shows that he can still cover some ground out there. But this could, I mean, teams won't admit it, but could give them, even if it's not overly serious, even if it costs them a couple days, would give them an excuse to DL him, add some help elsewhere. And I think that's a real possibility.
Yeah.
But let's move on here. Dexter Fowler, another guy who left tonight's game, his injury labeled as groin tightness. Another thing, you know, want to stress, can't stress it enough, really. Don't freak out. Fowler, a good guy that I really like in that lineup long term. But if this were to linger, I mean, we've seen Chris Bryant, Addison Russell come up. I saw somebody on Twitter speculate, you know, perhaps Albert Almora could be the next guy up. Do you think that's realistic, or do you think, you know, maybe he's a bit too young? They're going to wait on him.
So, you know, I don't think I could see that happening yet. I mean, even in tonight's game, I know how we've been stressing, don't overreact to injuries. We're recording this podcast, you know, shortly after a lot of these injuries are happening, so there's not a lot of information out yet. Of course, this is something new, shameless plug coming here. Check back on rotowire.com tomorrow morning, afternoon. We'll have something concrete as soon as it becomes available. Of course, check into rotowire.com/free for a free 10-day trial there. But
slash pod too.
Oh yeah, slash pod as well. Rotowire.com/pod. We'll get you hooked up in many ways there. But to be honest, I think DeNorfia is going to get a decent amount of those reps. He'll share outfield spots with Coughlin and Jorge Soler, and that's one way they can do it. And I know this is possibly a little bit out of the ordinary, but I know in tonight's game, after he came out, they moved Jonathan Herrera over to third base. Who was a recent call-up by them while Mike Gold and Tommy La Stella are on the disabled list. So they moved Herrera over to third base and actually played Chris Bryant in center field. So yes. that's another route that they could go. They don't necessarily need to call up another outfielder if Fowler has to miss a couple days. If it's just a couple days, they won't make a move. So, I mean, as intriguing as Almora is, I don't think his time's around the corner yet. Hopefully I'm not eating my words tomorrow.
I don't see it. I mean, it's reasonable to think that it could be a possibility, just given that, you know, how quickly they brought up a guy like Addison Russell, who, you know, that kind of came out of left field for me. I was not expecting that at all. But you look at Almora, I mean, numbers last year between high A and triple A, really not that impressive. I mean, just 36 games at double A, 605 OPS, not off to a great start this season, 13 for 46, three extra base hits, all doubles, five RBI. I just don't think, you know, at 21, he's somebody that they really want to throw into the fire. I think Russell, given his pedigree, was somebody that they trusted to come up and, you know, not be overwhelmed with major league pitching, and did have a hit today. I think it's interesting, though, that if Fowler were to miss time, I mean, who would they turn out to lead off? I don't think it'd be Russell, but he could be a fit there. Maybe a guy like Soler, but I don't know, maybe Starlin Castro. What do you think?
I don't know if they used Coughlin there in the past. I can't remember.
I think they used Coughlin a couple times top the order. Yeah, so last year at least.
You know, last year, of course, the situation was a lot more dire than it is this year in Chicago. So, that happened. You know, Coughlin not going to stole five bases last year. So, you know, not your ideal prototypical leadoff guy. It could be temporary. I'd be intrigued to see Addison Russell there, but of course, he's got to get it going at the plate a little bit, or at least help that on-base percentage a little bit before that warrants some serious consideration there. So that is definitely a situation worth monitoring moving forward, because if one of those guys that you mentioned moves up in the batting order, all of a sudden, you know, you've got bats like Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo behind you, and that becomes a very valuable potential add in a lot of formats.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be huge for Russell's value. Right now, I mean, I actually added him in our 10-teamer, but I think, you know, definitely does not need to be, and that was more of a speculative ad just in case he were to go off. Mm-hmm. But if he were to move atop the order, I mean, I'd say he'd have to be owned everywhere. Now, sticking in the NL Central, Mark Melancon did receive an endorsement from manager Clint Hurdle today. Hurdle said that, you know, Melancon would not be available Wednesday, but would remain in the closer role. Melancon's velocity, man, way, way down. I mean, he's throwing the fastball very, very rarely. I think it's right around 12% of the time right now. Fastball velocity down more than 4 miles per hour, pretty troubling. You know, it's nice of Hurdle to, you know, say that he's got the job, and it looks like he will have, you know, several more opportunities to, you know, reclaim the job and really lock it down. But, you know, who are your top speculative ads here? You know, if you're really scrambling for saves, you want to throw a dollar out there, get out ahead of the group. Ahead of the curve, who do you target here among this Pittsburgh bullpen?
I mean, you got to think about Watson as a speculative ad, just because, you know, he's been in the setup role. He's even closed games in the past. I remember last year when they would go from, you know, after Grilly got hurt, then they went to Melancon. If Melancon pitched too many days in a row, they would, you know, turn to Watson on occasion there. So somebody to think about. I think he would probably be the leading candidate in my book if I was out there trying to vulture saves in an NL-only format. Something to think about there. And he's got the stuff, but I know Melancon's velocity's down, but he's never relied on velocity. He's not a prototypical closer. He gets a decent amount of movement on his fastball, and he gets enough ground balls to get people out. Got the infield behind him, so I'm not ready to jump ship on Melancon just yet. But I guess if you've got a dollar on a $100 budget and want to throw out a dart, you could give that a shot here. Do you got any other ideas there, Clay?
Well, I mean, Watson does seem like the most obvious candidate. He did get the save tonight. Two innings, though, one hit allowed only, two scoreless innings, one strikeout. Jared Hughes, I don't think he'd really be the guy. I mean, he's probably best suited for a setup role, and he struggled tonight. Did not record an out, gave up 2 earned runs, 3 hits, and a walk. The guy that I'm really interested in here is Archimedes Caminero, Archie Caminero for short, as some people call him. I mean, he was really good tonight. 1 inning, perfect frame, just 12 pitches, struck out 2. Did have some struggles, I think it was Tuesday night, but he's somebody who, you know, throws absolute gas. And, you know, as a true, you know, back-end guy, I think he'd be a nice fit. Maybe, you know, they don't want to throw him in there. They want to make him prove it first. But especially dynasty leagues, if you're looking, you know, maybe towards late this season into next year, you want to maybe get a nice contract. I think a dollar contract on Caminero would probably get it done in Fab and could pay significant dividends.
Yeah, I don't doubt that one bit at all. I mean, you got to be looking ahead in those dynasty formats. I mean, you can get a young guy like that with potential. I mean, who knows if Melanson's velocity drops even more or he fumbles even a little bit more moving forward. You know, it could be a very valuable add and definitely push inflation up on the rest of the guys just a tad.
Yeah, Hurdle did say that he expects Melanson's velocity to tick back up. Said even Tony Watson's velocity was down in spring training, and that came up. But Caminero is the guy who I like as the dark horse to do it. I think Tony Watson, you know, would probably be the guy most people are on, and understandably so, but I think Caminero has a chance. I mean, third hole tonight, came into tonight with a 5.40 ERA, but the FIP was all the way down at 2.77. You know, looking at the average fastball velocity, 98.8 miles per hour. You know, that's up from 95.5 last year. So really, I don't know what it is, if there's maybe something he ironed out in his delivery to generate that extra velocity. But, man, that's pretty impressive when you're pumping it in on average almost at 99 miles per hour. And the swinging strike rate up at 15.6%. It was up at 15.8% last year. So I think, you know, he's somebody who's, you know, you buy a player based on the skills. And I think you go out and buy a guy like this for a buck, great skills at that price.
Yeah, can't argue with that. And once again, yeah, dynasty formats, you need to be thinking about that. Always a good place to start with skills. When someone, a young guy with velocity like that, he'd be the traditional closer option, you know, as opposed to, you know, guys like Melanson and Watson that are maybe dropping a little bit. You know, closer criteria, right-hander, strikeouts, power guy, walk-up music. Those are the four for me. So, yeah.
Those are the necessary requirements for any closer.
Minimum requirements there. So, and I think he does fit the bill.
One last kind of bookkeeping note here. So our listeners are aware, C.J. Wilson, scratched from Thursday's outing, may not be just a bookkeeping outing because his injury is labeled elbow stiffness. But for now, they're just pushing him back to Saturday. Nick Trapiano is going to start in his place on Thursday. You know, Matt Shoemaker has struggled a bit, but, you know, I imagine his leash in the starting role, in a starting role, is pretty long right now after last season. But, you know, Trapiano not guaranteed any extra time beyond this one start, but is now the time to jump on him?
I wouldn't say quite yet. I would wait and see how C.J. Wilson's start goes Saturday because, you know, I remember seeing that news and thinking, oh, elbow stiffness for a guy like this? This is, you know, they're going to shut him down for a little while, but no, they're just going to move him back to Saturday, so really only 2 days. So I'm not too worried about that, and I think it was Shoemaker that's on the bereavement list, so he'll be back in a couple of days there. That's how they were able to get the roster spot to call up Trapiano. So although the potential's there, and he's going to make a start, he's going to square off against Jesse Chavez on Thursday. So interesting little matchup, both guys that'll be really cheap on DraftKings, probably just a hint for later on in the pod. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's a time quite yet to start Trapiano. Even if you have him in a minor league spot, might not be the time to activate him yet either. You want to wait to see if he can carve out a little bit of a more consistent role in that starting rotation.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Even though in deeper AL only, like I'm in a 12-team AL only, I think he'd be a guy that you definitely want to target just because, I mean, numbers last year with the Astros AAA affiliate were really strong. 3.03 ERA, 0.99 whip, 8.7 strikeout per nine, 2.4 a walk per nine. Pretty good control, especially it's really encouraging that it's gotten better as he's progressed through the minor leagues. So far this season, I mean, really small sample, of course, but through two starts, you know, he has given up 5 runs, but a 12-2 K to walk, you know, 1.09 whip. He's somebody that I think, you know, you want to get him now because if Wilson's injury were to become, you know, serious, or if there was another injury in the rotation, I mean, he'd be the guy to come up. And on that team, you know, great source of wins. I think he'd be a nice addition. Even, you know, I'd even consider him in like Stake League or SKL as a flyer if you have the roster spot.
Yeah, and again, that's a little bit speculative, something looking for down the road, because we got to mention that the guarantee is not there quite yet. So, but again, SKL, our keeper league, a $1 bid, it's the same kind of situation as before, and you know, might be worth it because he's someone that can help you in dynasty formats, and at a $1 contract, why not?
Yeah, and fantasy is really all about, you know, getting out and getting these guys before, you know, you have to shell out $20 to $30, maybe more in fab. So, you know, definitely keep an eye on these guys. It's speculative, yes, but, you know, you hit on some of these speculative guys and really, you know, separate yourself. RotoWire listeners are winning serious money at DraftKings.com. Baseball season is heating up. You too could be winning serious cash. You need to check out DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-day fantasy sports site. Use the promo code DVR when you deposit for a free contest entry today. Jake, looking at Thursday's slate, you know, picking out some value plays on DraftKings. Who you got on the pitching side?
Well, my first instinct, you know, the last couple pods, I've always kind of ran the pick on the Twins theme now. But that's actually came back to bite me a little bit, because I'm going to kind of work the pick on the Brewers theme for a while with both Gomez and Lucroy on the disabled list. Just not very much offense going on in there. So where you can profit from this tomorrow, you know, maybe a little bit risky, but I like Homer Bailey at 8,200 on DraftKings. He's playing against the Brewers. Again, you know, Brewers offense, they're, you know, entering Wednesday's action. And this was including the offensive outburst, I guess, from Tuesday night. But entering the action Wednesday, they were tied for last in the league with only 6 home runs, tied for 8th in the league in strikeouts, the whole league, not National League, all of baseball. They have the number 27 batting average, hitting just .217. And like I said, that's after a 10-run effort yesterday. So Homer Bailey just kind of starting to come back, pick it up. Got knocked around a little bit in his first start of the year. Gave up, I believe it was 5 runs over 5.2 innings. But he did hit 95 on the gun, but that's slowly diminished as he's going on. So hopefully the stamina issues aren't too major there. But you absolutely got to think about starting him against the Brewers. Now, I went back after I made this pick, and then I went back and did a little more research, and career against Milwaukee is just 4-8 with a 4.94 ERA. So, you know, nothing to get too excited about there. But again, it's a gut instinct. You have to think of, you know, in the now, those career numbers were based on going against a lot better lineups than they're currently putting out there right now. You know, Scooter Gennett, another guy I mentioned on the disabled list, you know, he's going to have guys like Hector Gomez, Ilian Herrera, Logan Schaefer possibly in that lineup. And really the only true threat with the bat in that lineup outside of Gene Segura, who's got off to a decent start hitting over 300 out of the leadoff spot. But really the only other true threat in that lineup is probably Adam Lind. And, you know, I'm not going to worry about that a whole lot. One guy is not going to kill you. And I think Bailey and that staff is going to be able to figure it out. As much as it pains me to say, I mean, Cueto took care of him tonight, and I don't see things going too much differently tomorrow.
You know, I think Chris Davis also kind of kills Bailey, but you're right. I don't know. It's great matchup for him, just given how banged up they are. You know, you mentioned Bailey's line from his first start of the year, 9 hits, 3 walks, but the big, big red flag for me is the 0 strikeouts. I mean, I think that was only, you know, 4th, 5th time in his career he's failed to record a strikeout in a start. Swinging strike rate was pretty low. It was all the way down at, you know, 6.5%. And I don't know. I mean, the line drive rate was right around his career norm at 20.8%, but I just, yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. And as a Reds fan, I mean, I hope you're right, but I'm a bit hesitant on Bailey. I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach with him for now. But you're right, there really couldn't be a much better matchup for him. For me, I got Kyle Hendricks. I mean, 7,000 at Pittsburgh. Now, a lot of people probably look at that ERA, 6.10 through 2 starts, be a bit discouraged. But the FIP all the way down at 2.49, I really liked what I saw from him his last time out. Didn't give up that homer to Matt Kemp in the first inning, but then absolutely cruised, struck out 8, which was really the big surprise for me. Not recommending you bank on those kind of strikeout numbers, but you know, with Hendricks, the big thing is the control. I mean, he's a great whip asset in season-long leagues, and I think, you know, he makes for a pretty safe bet even on the road against a pretty tough offense in Pittsburgh, inducing a lot of weak contact two through three starts, just a 10% line drive rate. I mean, that's really, really low. And the Pirates do have some heavy hitters, but coming into Wednesday's game, they actually had the 13th ranked team OPS in the National League at 637. And also, I mean, we didn't touch on this in the news portion, but Starling Marte hit on the hand tonight. X-rays were negative, thankfully, but wouldn't be surprised if he's held out. And he's really been, you know, their heavy lifter offensively. So I think Hendricks, you know, in this divisional matchup at that price is a very strong play.
Yeah, especially the price is the biggest thing, because as we were talking about before, you know, I guess fantasy is almost like the stock market in a lot of ways, where you got to buy low, sell high. And Hendricks, this is a very good chance that this could be the lowest price you see him at all season. And that's plenty of room. I mean, if you get Hendricks at 7,000 versus, you know, one of the top guys at 11, 12,000, you have plenty of more flexibility with not only your other pitcher, but the rest of your hitters. So I do like that. I do like the matchup. I can definitely get on board with that for you there.
Now, I also, you know, Drew Hutchison at 6,700 against Baltimore looks really, you know, appealing as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. But he did burn me in our recent big tournament. You know, in going up against a team like Baltimore, potentially strong value, but pretty risky as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, risky guy. And speaking of tournaments, if you are going to try to win it all and go out there in one of those you know, low entry fee, got to finish near the top type contests, a guy I like actually is Jesse Chavez going against the Angels. He's sitting only at 4,300 on DraftKings tonight, and he is going to start normally a long reliever. So I look back at his usage. He pitched on Saturday, so he'll actually have a normal day's rest. He only threw 57 pitches in that outing and a little over three innings, three plus, I think. But so, I mean, I could see him getting cleared to maybe toss 75, 80 pitches, even more if he's rolling. And at the beginning of last year, we did see flashes from Chavez that he could be a fairly decent starter. And of course, after the A's made all those trades and revamped their pitching staff, Chavez was delegated to the bullpen there. But definitely got to love, you know, where he is, the rest that he's at, the price. I mean, 4,300, he's like half of the majority of the rest of the pitchers. I'm sure if you took them together and averaged them out, he'd be about half. So you can really stack hitters or still have serviceable hitters and afford to buy one of the aces in the lineup. And again, it's risky. It's for a tournament. Sometimes you got to pull those cards in a tournament where, you know, not a lot of people are going to own Chavez, I'd imagine. Maybe the price will bring more people towards the side, but not looking too great. But then again, hey, you know, facing Tropeano instead of CJ Wilson, we'll see how the experience factor goes there and if you might be able to last deeper into the game. So just a couple things to think about if you're looking for a tournament flyer, Chavez or Hutchinson.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that getting a guy like Chavez, you know, really helps you stack up. And, you know, when you got a matchup in Coors Field against the Padres and the Rockies, I mean, a lot of those hitters are really highly priced, and you know, you really need to skim on pitching if you're gonna you know, load up on those guys. Between those two teams, I mean, I think it'll be a pretty popular pick either way. I mean, I think I forget who's starting for the Padres tomorrow, but I know the Rockies are starting Jordan Lyles.
I think it's Tyson Ross.
Tyson Ross, nice call. So I mean, Ross obviously the guy, the better pitcher there. You know, which Padres hitters do you like to return value tomorrow?
I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, because I did definitely want to go with the Padres stack, and I know it's real easy to stack the team at Coors Field. The over-under on that game is 10.5, so there's definitely some going to be some runs scored in that. And, you know, if you're playing in daily, you want to hope that, you know, the Padres, you know, go off like they did in the first game of the season. And against the right-hander and Lyles, there's a few. I mean, of course, you've got your standard guys like I don't know, let's see, Kemp at 5,900, Upton at 5,200, Will Myers at 4,700. But I really want to focus on the lefties a little bit more. Will Venable at just 4,400. Yonder Alonso off to a very good start. He's at just 4,300. And then another wild card with the Padres, switch hitter Yonder Solarte. He went yard again tonight, and he's starting to slowly take playing time away from Jed Jarko. And Bud Black put it simply, he's hitting and Jed isn't. And this could become a more permanent solution, because you got to love that versatility switch hitting. He did start off pretty hot, I guess, with the Yankees last year, and definitely helped out quite a bit. And he could help you out in daily, because at just 3,700, You got to make sure, of course, that he's in the lineup first over Jarco. That's what the pattern has been suggesting lately, but I don't think the Padres are quite ready to bail on Jarco yet. And who knows? Watch out for Solarte, because that price could be on the rise as well pretty soon if he has a few more performances like tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bud Black was asked about the possibility of a platoon at second base, and he kind of skirted around it, didn't really answer it directly. I think that's, you know, as you kind of alluded to, really how it's trending right now. Especially in a lineup that's so right-handed heavy, having a guy like Solarte who can switch hit from the left side, you know, especially he was batting the two hole tonight. I mean, that's a great fantasy play if he's up there again tomorrow and is able to hold that down. I mean, really nice even in season long. You mentioned Will Venable, you know, going to want to be sure that he's actually in the lineup, just like with Solarte. But I'm with you that, you know, having a lefty in there against Lyles, I mean, that'd probably be a good excuse to get maybe Will Myers, maybe Justin Upton, who was kind of banged up recently, maybe get one of those guys a day off.
Yeah, that's the exact train of thought. And again, all the stuff's going to be on our lineups page early tomorrow morning, so definitely be sure to check that out. Mostly afternoon games, so it's a good day to maybe take off work and watch some baseball all day, maybe head out to the ballpark if you've got something going on in your area. But, yeah, you know, Venable a little bit on the fringe there, but definitely Solarte, if he's in the lineup, and almost Alonso for sure, just if he can keep that going at of course, the hitter-friendly Coors Field. But, Clay, I know you've got some hitters that you're looking to stack up tomorrow. You want to run those down?
Yeah, but first, don't put that idea in my head of taking a day off to just watch baseball. That sounds amazing right now.
Already took a half day Monday to watch the Brewers, so we got to take her easy.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the Reds-Brewers finish off their four-game set. I'd love to see the Reds bust out the broomstick. Sorry, Jake. But, yeah, I'm on the Cubs. I mean, I was on Kyle Hendricks as well. But, you know, DraftKings, you can have Hendricks and four, you know, Cubs hitters too. So, I mean, I really like the right-handers against Jeff Locke. Locke actually has had success against, you know, the Cubs so far in his career, but hasn't really faced a lot of these new guys, of course. And it was a really small sample to begin with, only, you know, 52 at-bats, I think it was. So, you know, I really like Jorge Soler at 4,500, Chris Bryant, 4,400, Starlin Castro at 4,000, and Chris DeNorfia. I mean, with a lefty in there, probably going to spell Chris Coughlin over there in left field. I think, you know, his price only 3,300. I mean, that's dirt cheap. You get some of these guys, you know, like Bryant and Soler, who, you know, I think in a month will probably be, you know, 5,000 plus on DraftKings, maybe even 5,500. Yeah, guys are excellent.
I was going to say Chris Bryant. I wouldn't be surprised to see him reach, you know, by mid-May, get a $6,000 price tag on him as being one of the top options because he's been tearing it up. And, of course, DeNorfia, we did talk about the Fowler injury earlier. So if they do decide to take it easy there a little bit and possibly sit Fowler for a game, as well as, you know, possibly platooning Coughlin, I think DeNorfia could be real sneaky value at 3,300, especially with all these day games going on tomorrow. This is a lot of guys like to rest their veterans day games after night games. You know, checking out the starting lineups as soon as possible is a great way to get you ahead in your daily contest, possibly getting some cheap guys that you can use to stack the rest of your lineup with, you know, with proven hitters or aces even.
Yeah, another cheap plug. I mean, the daily lineups app, get that. I mean, we
free download.
I'm not even BSing here. We get those lineups in quicker than anybody else. Any place you'll find around the old internet there. And we also have all the weather listed in the app as well. So really great DFS tool, free download too. So I definitely recommend that. And I'm not just pumping it because it's RotoWire. Definitely stand behind that. Jake, we'll get into just a few box scores. We're already nearing the 50-minute mark of the show, but I want to touch on at least this one and probably a couple others. David Price, I mean, this one was brutal. I mean, he had a really rough start against the Yankees last year, but this one maybe matched that. 8 earned runs on 10 hits, 3 walks, just 2 1/3 innings, 2 strikeouts, took the loss. You know, troubling, but is this one where you just throw it out the window? I mean, his ERA even after the start is still at 3.28.
All right, David Price owners, I'm just going to pull an Aaron Rodgers here. Everybody relax. Just relax. He didn't last very long. He had a rough outing, took a pounding. But if anyone watched that game, it was snowing outside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot, some of the East Coast games have that going on here as well as in Detroit. I mean, I stepped up my front porch in Madison, Wisconsin to see snow coming down. And, of course, not really an ideal situation for a pitcher when you're already bunched up in a turtleneck and are trying to throw to guys through snow. Not even a rain delay. It was snowing outside. So mm-hmm. not going to blame him for this one. Just kind of shake it off, brush the dirt off the shoulder, pick it up, take the hill the next time and be the ace that he is. And I have little doubt in that.
Yeah, he's... I mean, it was like a blizzard in Pittsburgh, too. Did you see that?
Yep. It's like snowing sideways all over the place. And, I mean, man, it's almost May. Come on.
Yeah, that's terrible. And, yeah, that's a big thing to really take into account because, you know, when you can't really properly grip the ball, I mean, you can't spin it. You leave pitches up and they get hammered. So, the three walks, you know, not good. Two strikeouts. But this is one where, yeah, he was so excellent in his first couple starts. David Price, proven guy. You just gotta completely turn the page on this. Not worry about it. He's a guy that's a true set it and forget it guy. I even had him over Johnny Cueto coming into the year, and I still feel that he's the better option.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I think he was possibly a top three pitcher coming in, and the way these Tigers bats have came alive in the early part of the season, he's going to get his wins and he's going to get his strikeouts, and there's nothing to worry about. We had to bring it up because if you look at that box score and look at that line, you think, whoa, what the heck happened? And definitely, I think the weather came into effect just a little bit there.
Five Yankees with multiple hits in this one: Jacoby Ellsbury, Chris Young, Brian McCann, Carlos Beltran, Chase Headley. Chris Young, I mean, 3 for 6 with 2 runs scored. Mark Teixeira had a homer in the 7th inning of this one off Al Albuquerque. Chris Young is a guy who went in the lineup. I mean, not somebody I really advocate in season long, but went in the lineup. I mean, he was batting second today. Pretty decent daily option. We'll go to, let's see here. Let's go to Boston and Tampa Bay. This one was kind of interesting. Steven Souza had a line drive homer. Do you see that thing?
I did not see the replay, but I did see Twitter go off quite a bit about that at the time. So
yeah, I mean, he got out of there in a hurry, but he also doubled, but then ended up leaving with, I think it was a forearm cramp, mm-hmm. something like that. Yep. So be sure to keep an eye on that. Pitching for Boston, Joe Kelly, 5 innings, 5 earned runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks though. ERA at 4.08. Edward Mojica actually took the loss. He's a guy who's, you know, was kind of next in line behind Koji Uehara, but, you know, with his performance so far this season, I think he's kind of fallen behind Junichi Tozawa.
Yeah, definitely something to monitor, of course. I had owned Mojica in the past, and I've seen that he's very much capable of this and can do that at any time. This is possibly his last time around to actually earn a decent saves opportunity, and he's not really handling it well so far. So Red Sox just crossing their fingers, waiting on the return of Koji Uehara there.
Well, Uehara is back and has recorded a couple saves, but he's somebody who's, like with Melanson, I mean, just not throwing the fastball, and it's just a question mm-hmm. of how long he can get by doing that. On the Tampa Bay side, Nate Karns, pretty poor outing, but, you know, 6 innings, 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. It does sound like they got some encouraging news with Alex Cobb. He's going to throw his first bullpen session Friday, so, you know, Karns probably not long for that role. Doesn't really deserve it to begin with. They just had so many injuries. Interesting that Brad Boxberger actually worked the 7th in this game. Then Kevin Jepsen in the 8th, and Steve Geltz got the save in this one. First of the season, I still think Boxberger is the guy to own here, and I think he has a chance to keep that job even after Jake McGee returns.
I mean, is Joe Maddon managing them still? Because that's a textbook Joe Maddon move to just shake it up like that based on matchups. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. But nope, Joe Maddon's managing the Cubs last time I checked, so I guess I can't really explain that one.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know exactly how this game was played out, but Boxberger did get the win. So, I mean, he's still a highly valuable reliever.
Hey, that helps.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who, you know, if he does hold on to that job, could be a top 10 closer for sure by the end of the season. Dustin Pedroia, another home run tonight, 4 already so far this season. David Ortiz hit a bomb, his 3rd. You know, not going to be much longer before, you know, David Ortiz passes him for the, you know, for, you know, home run total, but you got to be really encouraged with the power Pedroia is showing early on. I really like what he's bringing to the table. We'll jump to one more here. Mets Braves. Mets pulled out a 3-2 victory over Atlanta, improved to 12-3. Man, that's impressive. Atlanta, after the hot start, has fallen to 8-6. We knew regression was inevitable, but Yuris Familia, seventh save already this season. I mean, he's somebody who I know you have a share of, and at this point, I mean, seven saves through 15 games is a pretty amazing rate.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm reaping the benefits. You know, he's putting my stake league team on my back, and definitely helping single-handedly. I think I might have 12 saves, and he's got seven of them. So absolutely going for Yuris Familia. Got to love it. And, I mean, those Mets, just they're getting hot at the right time heading into that Subway Series, and I'm sure that's exactly how they want to take it with the rivalry there. I mean, on the Mets side, Granderson got passed over for the start there in favor of Mayberry Jr. Nothing too noteworthy there. I think Granderson's just getting gearing up for a weekend there against the rivals, against his old team. Duda stays hot, slashing .339, .403, .518 on the year with another 2-for-4 performance. So those guys are they're all performing. And even Wilmer Flores, he had half their RBIs today. So definitely someone to watch so far. Maybe your NL-only shortstop situation isn't so dire after all, Clay.
Yeah, it's looking up. Third home run of the season. Yeah, and he's somebody who I actually think the three homers leads the Mets. So, you know, does have some issues in the field, but now that he's swinging the bat, I mean, looking like a pretty nice option, not only in NL only, but really as a deep mixer middle infielder type that you plug in there and just let him do his thing. Going to have some ups and downs for sure, but you just got to kind of weather the storm. On the show yesterday, I recommended a Mets stack against Eric Stoltz. Stoltz kind of proved me wrong. I mean, even though the Mets pulled this one out, Stoltz went six innings, gave up just four hits, one earned run, five strikeouts, and no walks. So that's a pretty nice outing for him. Cody Martin really, I think he served up the homer to Flores. He took a blown save. He was off to a really nice start, still a 1.0 ERA. But, you know, this Braves team, you look at him from top to bottom. I mean, A.J. Pierzynski, he really accounted for most of the offense tonight. He had went 3-for-3, and with Christian Bethencourt struggling, I think he could really become a fixture in the middle of this order and really take over the primary role.
Yeah, I mean, he was available in a few of the leagues that I was looked at checking on. Of course, you know, being from Wisconsin, I have to own a couple shares of Lucroy, currently sitting on the DL with an extended stay coming up, 6 to 8 weeks. So I've been browsing for catchers. You know, definitely an option that you have to look for. Of course, on the Mets side, you know, you got to think of Pawecki. Of course, I'm sure he's going to go for a pretty penny in our auctions this weekend in a two catcher league, you know, where you got 16, 17 teams and you know, not too much depth there. So he's going to go there for sure. So absolutely something to think about moving forward.
Yeah. And I mean, JT Realmuto is another guy who's, you know, kind of taken over the top job in Miami. Said on the show yesterday, I would rather have Realmuto, but, I think if I were to rank him, I'd say, I'd say Realmuto, Pierzynski, Plawecki. I mean, Plawecki does have the primary job until Travis d'Arnaud's back, but you know, a question of how much he's really going to hit. So
what I like about Plawecki is that you know, d'Arnaud has a similar projected absence to Lucroy, so Lucroy owners that need a rental, the timing might work out well.
That's a good point. We did have another Twitter question, as I mentioned earlier. This one from at Troy Thibodeau 1, hypothetical trade offer here. You know, this one I actually kind of had to think about for a bit. One side, Buster Posey, Alex Cobb, K-Rod. Other side, Derek Norris, Jacob deGrom, Craig Kimbrell. Which way are you leaning here, Jake?
You know what? I'm actually leaning towards the second side, and that's what I responded to him earlier. I think, you know, you look at these players, kind of line them up one by one. Buster Posey and Norris from the Padres. Of course, Norris is a pretty significant downgrade there, but that downgrade is almost matched by the upgrade from K-Rod to Kimbrell. I mean, most of K-Rod's appearances have been non-save situations this year, whereas Kimbrell and the Padres off to a pretty solid start, and I think is a team that's going to win a lot of games. And, of course, you're getting one of the best closers in the game. And then you compare the starting pitchers in the middle, DeGrom, Cobb. Once Cobb is back, you know, there's probably a little bit more positive outlook, but, you know, at least you have DeGrom now. And I, you know, if you look at rest of season projections, I don't really think there's a huge drastic difference between Cobb and DeGrom. So, you know, if you push in the middle, of course, Posey has a much bigger or a higher advantage over Norris, but I think that's almost equaled by Kimbrel over K-Rod. So I take the second half. I take Norris, DeGrom, and Kimbrel. I don't know if you're in agreement, Clay, or what you got.
Yeah, I am, but it's really kind of by a hair. I mean, it's so hard to pass up on Posey, you know what I mean? And but at the same time, yeah, he's the best player in the deal, but Kimbrel's still, in my opinion, a top 60-65 type of overall player. So, you know, you take that hit, but then you upgrade it, the next two players. I mean, I do think when Cobb comes back, you know, I'd probably, yeah, that's tough. I actually, you know, skills-wise, I like Cobb more, but DeGrom healthy now and Cobb coming back, I mean, you never know if there could be a setback. He's had a ton of injury issues throughout his career. Hard to trust him to stay healthy. And with K-Rod, I mean, this Brewers team's looking, I mean, sorry again, Jake, but looking terrible. And, I mean, the start he got off to last season, I mean, he's off to another strong start this year, but, you know, save opportunities few and far between on this team. And I think that'll continue to be the case. Whereas Kimbrel, I mean, he did give up a homer the other night, but got the save. And pitching in that park on that team, I think he's going to, you know, probably end up right where he always ends up, probably the NL leader in saves.
Yeah, the ballpark factor, you can't underestimate that. That's going to help. And I'd be surprised if anyone other than Kimbrel led the NL in saves. I mean, of course, Juris Familia, watch out. But yeah. No, the complete joke there. But no, I'm fully accepting and ready and waiting to take the beating that's going to come as a Brewer fans this year, because I'm not looking too optimistic. And K-Rod, he just started off on fire last year. Last year, I mean, the Brewers led the Central until the last couple months of the season. They didn't even look back until then. And, of course, you know, things kind of melted down there. But, you know, K-Rod's, the majority of his production was in the first half. He was looking like a young man again. But the guy's got to be a little bit out of rhythm. I mean, he came in, I think, possibly Monday night when we were there, when they were down 5 runs, came in a tie game tonight, which is probably, you know, something that he's more accustomed to. But I am a little bit down on K-Rod, just opportunity-wise. Even closers on bad teams should still be able to carve out 20, 30 saves. But, and, you know, obviously really fingers crossed that it's the same case for K-Rod. But I think, yeah, that K-Rod-Kimbrel difference, like I said, for me, counteracts the Posey-Norris difference, which is why I go the second half of that trade, I'd rather have Norris to Grom-Kimbrel.
Yeah, I mean, Posey at that position is so far above everybody else, but, you know, you can't really discount what Norris is doing so far. I mean, 3 straight multi-hit games coming into tonight. I was actually moved down in the order, though, even after that, from 2nd to 6th, but I think 6th would actually be more fruitful for fantasy purposes, a lot more RBI opportunities. I think that's probably, you know, with him swinging that hot bat, where he should be in that key RBI producing spot. So, you know, he could really end up as a top, you know, maybe top 8 catcher. I think that's realistic for Norris. I mean,
yeah, I was going to say top 10, but yeah, top 8 definitely can't hold that back. Because who are the other guys that are in that kind of realm? Maybe Ramos. I don't know.
I mean, now that Lucroy's gone, there. I mean, yeah. You look at it. I mean, I think, oh man, it's tough to say exactly, but I think, you know, I had him outside of my top 10, I'm pretty sure, you know, coming in, but I think, you look at it. Let me pull this up actually real quick by position here and just see how many of these guys I would realistically take over Derek Norris right now. I mean, Buster Posey, obviously, Lucroy. I mean, given the absence, it's close. I mean, probably still rather stash Lucroy, but then Yan Gomes out as well with an injury for, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. Evan Gattis, you know, swinging and missing a ton. I'd rather have Norris probably right now. Sal Perez, I guess I got to give the edge to Sal Perez. Brian McCann, I mean, I guess, but it's
a little
pretty close.
Bit more power, I think, in Yankee Stadium. I think he'll be able to give it a little bit more power. But a lot of catcher injuries going on.
Devin Mesoraco, Yadier Molina, Matt Wieters, Wilson Ramos, and then we have Derek Norris at 11 on our site's rankings. But I think, he can leap a lot of those guys, especially if their injuries end up pushing even further beyond their estimated return. But if you have any other questions you'd like us to tackle in future episodes, strategies, specific players, etc., hit us up on Twitter. I'm at ClayWLink. Jake is at JakeSki52. You can also email us at fantasybaseballpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast powered by DraftKings.com. And again, if you listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher, and can please rate and review the podcast, we're really appreciative of any and all feedback we can get. Paul and Doug will be back with you on Friday.